Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
It is indeed this week in the chat with Andrew Little. Lillian Hanley talked to Andrew Little about Waitangi, about the speech and address that he gave fully in Te Reo Māori, and whether the government has managed to address some of the key issues raised by Māori prior to Waitangi Day. Lillian also gets the minister to explain his position on constitutional transformation and what he thinks the role of the Waitangi Tribunal is following comments by the opposition to eventually disestablish it.
I thought I should start by again congratulating you for your mihi on at Waitangi.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, it was a great privilege to be able to do it, actually.
But how long have you been learning?
I started some lessons in 2018, but I only had, I had a guy coming in to tutor me. He had another full-time job. So we actually, over the course of the year, we probably did a dozen lessons. I've never struggled with the pronunciation, but it's just learning the rules about it. But I didn't have any lessons last year, so that that whaikōrero, I just learned by heart. I wrote the speech, wrote the comments, Te Ara Whiti translated it and made a few edits, and then I just learned it and put it together. So it was kind of my summer project.
Right.
To learn it and be able to deliver it. And as I say, look, you know, given the occasion and the location as well, and that I'm a minister, I felt a great sense of privilege to be able to do it. And a great sense of just being able to communicate to both Te Māori generally, but Te Ngāpuhi in particular, in their language, and reflect back some of the things I've learned from them and my engagements with them over the last couple of years.
So I guess on that note, how was Waitangi for you this year?
Oh, I know, it was very good. I think you know, what Jacinda Ardern has done is, you know, requires various ministers to be there for a number of days, so you actually get out and about and reorganise other activities around it. So it's not just sort of quickly fly in and then fly back out for, you know, having been there for a few hours. She has a personal commitment to, you know, what we do at Waitangi and the build-up to it and the day itself being a very important thing. So it reflects that. So it was good. We did a number of, you know, there was the opening of the new museum to the Māori Battalion. There was the unveiling of the statue to Whenukupa, and then just the engagement with the community generally was very positive.
Yeah. Do you think that there was sort of adequate time, or there was the chance to go through some of the kind of key issues? I mean, you had, you know, not long before Waitangi, Whānau Ora has come out with a tribunal claim. So, you know, and then of course Oranga Tamariki's ongoing stuff. Was there a chance to kind of go through these big issues?
Yeah, look, there's a number of engagements happened throughout the week, and one of them is with the Iwi Chairs Forum, and we met with them, and that was good. Like, we had a couple of hours with them. They just laid out their various taki, and we were able to respond. And like, it was a constructive engagement. It always is, and it's a way of saying, look, here's some things that have been happening. Here's some things that need to be done better. Here's some things that, you know, we can help with, or things that you need to be doing. And it was good. And so we get that level of engagement. And then some of the, look, you end up, various ministers end up meeting with various NGOs and other community groups and organisations and getting their insights about how things are going for them. So you do look across the week and across the various ministers who are there. There was a lot of engagement going on and a lot of getting feedback about what the Crown is doing wrong and right and what can be done better.
On that note, there's lots of Māori advocates who are calling actually for constitutional transformation to be on the conversation. I'm wondering what you and even the coalition government knows about the Matike Mai report from 2016.
I don't know a great deal about it. And I know certainly engagements I've had with people like Professor Margaret Mutu, they've raised that. And I think, I think we're just going to have to keep that dialogue going. I don't detect, I can tell you within the government there's not a huge political appetite to embark on significant constitutional change. I think the first step to any constitutional change is there being a level of community and support and a sort of a groundswell for change. I don't think we're at that point, but there's plenty to talk about. And I think, I mean, one of the things I talked about in my whaikōrero was about Hepa Kapūtanga, the Declaration of Independence, that sits alongside the treaty and, you know, what it means to to give that meaning in this day and age, and we need to have that kōrero, and hopefully we'll kick that off this year.
In terms of there being that political appetite, do you think it's sort of necessary in the sense that it might be an obligation in terms of going through that healing? You know, a lot of people talk about it as a healing process because we haven't quite reached a point of justice yet, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I think that's the whole treaty settlement process is about coming to terms with our history and certainly some of the more ugly parts of it. And likewise, as we start to continue our understanding of the treaty and Te Whakaputanga and what it meant at the time. I mean, one of the kuia who's been kind of assisting me and my understanding over the last couple of years described it as, we were trying to get to is a restoration of the relationship as at 1840. And she said, it'll be different. It'll be expressed in different ways, but what we both need to feel is a sense that the relationship has been restored. There's a mutuality to it. There's a mutual respect. And I think that's a good way to characterise it, and I think that's where we need to get to.
Is the government, or if you can speak personally, I suppose, are you open to giving up some power to allow for that space that Māori are looking for?
Look, I think that's the political challenge, and I don't get to decide that on my own. What I'm certainly very keen on, and what I personally and politically promote, is the idea of dialogue. Good, a lot of dialogue and structured dialogue, and challenging dialogue too, which is and which it will be and it should be when considering things like Te Whakaputanga, because I think there is that question you raise, which is about more sharing of power. That's ultimately what we have to be considering, and we talk about that a lot anyway. We talk about devolution to communities and allowing Māori and iwi to take more control of issues. That's what sits at the heart of the Oranga Tamariki sort of issues, and we have to be having that discussion. We have to be open to it.
Just lastly on Waitangi, Simon Bridges raised that he thinks a Waitangi tribunal should eventually not exist, I suppose. So just touching on what you said too about the treaty settlements process, could you just explain to me what you understand the tribunal's role to be?
Well, it has been to assist in determining grievances, but also historical accounts as well. And I don't see their role ending. I think it might change. And I think We kid ourselves if we think that the treaty settlement process is reaching an end point. I see it as very much a start point. But once we reach agreement with iwi on redress for breaches of the treaty, that's the start of a new relationship. And look, it won't be all plain sailing either. And we still need resort, and we'll continue to need resort to the tribunal to deal with conflicts that arise out of agreements that have already been reached.
And that kind of the thinking around this, like you say, the treaty settlements process coming to an end or there being an end point, and that's something that National, I think it's their policy actually, that they want to reach an end, that doesn't provide space for an ongoing relationship in that sense, right?
Yeah, and that's why I think they characterise it the wrong way. I mean, we might get to an end to the point of the historical treaty claims that are all lodged with the tribunal, we'll reach agreement on those, but that's not an end of the process by any stretch. We've got an ongoing relationship that we have to continue to work on and to build and develop and grow. And as we do that, there will be points of conflict where the tribunal will need to be called on to assist. I see the tribunal very much having an ongoing role. It'll be different to a lot of the stuff they're doing now, but they will continue to have a role.
And one of those roles is actually to deal with breaches of the treaty. And somebody pointed out on Twitter that removing the tribunal would actually be a breach of the treaty.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I think unless we come up with some other kind of formula for how we conduct the future relationship. But, look, we're dealing with historical breaches of the treaty. There are contemporary breaches as well. And, the tribunal is dealing with those. The treaty could be breached at any time. And agreements that have been reached with iwi could be breached as well. We know, in fact, plenty of people say, look, we had these commitments about engagement, whether it's with the local government or with particular government agencies, and we just aren't getting it right yet. So we still need the backstop of the tribunal being there to say, OK, well, how do we make this work?
And in terms of their powers, because my understanding is that they can only make sort of recommendations, or are there binding powers from the tribunal?
They mainly make recommendations. They do. There are some limited respects in which they can make binding decisions. There's a bit of a process to go through. I'm just trying to think whether there has been a binding decision made. I can't think of one, but certainly it's come into consideration at various times. So they could do, but I think typically what happens is they get to the point where a binding decision is a possibility, and both the Crown and the relevant iwi think, okay, well, this could go anyway, so we'll talk and we'll come up with an agreement. It tends to focus the minds of the parties.
Okay, well, my final sort of question was around, there is currently a prisoner in Dumatucka prison on hunger strike, and actually my understanding is that they're sort of blocking any kind of communication or, you know, sort of news from understanding what it is that he is striking. So I was wondering if you could explain just what the kind of regulations around that are in terms of, you know, what happens to someone who is striking in prison?
I think the prison authorities have a responsibility for that person's welfare regardless. And I know that I met a family member recently who, and I wasn't aware of it until they had told me. I was out somewhere and I made some inquiries about it and was able to get back to them. So look, in a situation like this, obviously the prison management will work with the person and their whānau. If the person refuses food, they refuse food. As I understand it, this person is taking water and is taking electrolytes, but if you're not taking solids, eventually, you know, you can cause yourself serious harm. So the prison works, you know, as closely as they can with the person and with the family to try and either resolve what is driving them to go on hunger strike, but at least to look after their welfare. You know, sometimes, you know, prisons make demands that are simply not possible to meet, but you don't want them to, you can't just abandon them and leave them. You've still got to look after their welfare, and I understand that's happening in this case.
My understanding is that they're, like, in terms of somebody who is striking, there's obviously like a point that they are trying to make, or it's a protest, right? So what are the inmates' rights around that?
Obviously if they go on hunger strike, they go on hunger strike. I'm not close enough to know what the rules are about how to communicate. I mean, you lose a lot of communication privileges, but you have a right to communicate with your family, and as I understand, the family are involved in working with the prison and the guy concerned. But in terms of talking publicly, I simply don't know what the rules are around that.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Minister, and I'm sure Mary Margaret will be back next week.
Indeed, okay.
Mā te wā.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.